time that you guys, I mean, there's the demo. I'm assuming that's what got you to victory.
Yeah.
So at the point that you're recording Firestorm, you are recording it with the intent of releasing it with
Victory? Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, once we decided to be serious, we recorded the 8-song demo, 9-song. I forget how many were on it. But and then we sent that out to a bunch of people, and everybody was like, no, you guys are messed up. Why is this Taxi Driver sample in the beginning? You know, that's totally fucked up. Like,
that's
we
great.
Literally
that,
got...
That's like, think about how many, you know, I mean, like, for me, Taxi Driver, I mean, there's a whole generation of people in our age group that probably that movie means so fucking much. And putting absolutely. That in your... you had me before it started.
Like, yeah, yeah. Well, so that's... Yeah, and that's the world we were coming from. I mean, we were hanging out with... You know, people every day that turned us on to these movies and stuff, and we got to watch this. So we were, you know, it was like that fun, perfect era of your life when all you did was watch movies and play music and fuck around. It was like literally we would watch a movie, we would practice, and then we would fuck around for 2 hours doing prank phone calls and shit. You know, it was great. It was like the perfect thing for that age of your 15-year-old, you know, life. It was great. And, yeah, but, you know, I guess it was too much for people. They were taking things so serious, you know. So we sent it out. And I remember, and I've talked to Mike Hartsfield about this, you know, in the past, but we really wanted to be on New Age. And we sent it to him, and he wrote us back a letter, you know. And I can't even imagine how many months in between this
right.
there was,
that'd
you know.
Be a long time.
Yeah, but we got a letter back, and it was like, dudes, I really love the record. I love the songs. I love the band. He's like, but I just can't get with it, like this, the vibe, you know? And we were like, and he specifically said, like, the taxi driver sample at the beginning really just left a bad taste in my mouth. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. And but he, you know, we've laughed about it later because he's like, biggest mistake I ever made. You
right.
know? You know? And I was like, I guess, you know, I don't know. But Tony being, you know, I guess the fucked up guy he is, was like, I love it. You right. know, like, don't change a thing. Yeah. You know, we were like, great. And we loved Victory. You know, we were a huge Victory fan. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, I mean, Victory was bulletproof for a long time. I mean, yeah. It was like, if
every
it was
release,
worth hearing it.
Every
was
single
Victory.
Release
yeah.
was awesome. Yeah.
It was crazy.
And again, I wouldn't have known anything about Victory if it wasn't for Mike Riccardi. Like, Mike Riccardi was the one who was just trying so hard to get me into hardcore.
Yeah.
Because he was with me. Like, I knew him from high school, and we grew up skating together, and we loved Slayer. And, you know, I remember getting South of Heaven with him and going and listening to it in his basement, and our minds were fucking blown.
Yeah.
I mean, our minds were blown. You know, and I still actually just, I think that, I love that record still. I mean, it's a, who wouldn't? It's a great album, but it holds a special place because it was like, I just remember being like, I think this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the drumming on it, Mike was a drummer, you know, he's a drummer. So I remember just sitting there and listening to it, and he was like, dude, this is like the most incredible thing I ever heard.
You know? Well, and that album is like, you know, I love Slayer, period, but... That album, it's the atmosphere, it's the creepiness.
Absolutely,
that,
it was
that
terrifying.
Album was fucking scary.
Well, at the age we were when it came out, I mean, I was probably 12, and I remember it scared me.
Yeah,
like I remember literally being like, and actually the album after Seasons in the Abyss, I think is after, right? The one right yeah. after. So there was like, what was the song? The Ed Gein song, like Dead Skin Mask,
yeah,
and you could
yeah.
hear like the kids and stuff, like in the. I remember going to sleep listening to it at night. And being like completely fucking freaked
yeah.
out because you'd hear the kids like, Mr. Gein, help us or whatever. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, cause it's just a level enough where it sounds like that could be in your room or outside.
Right.
It was fucking freaky, but it's South of Heaven too. And I remember Mike got it. I didn't even ask my mom if I could get that. Cause I was like, she's going to look at the cover and be like, no. And he went up to his mom and she was like, what is this Satan shit, you know?
Right.
But she got it for him anyway. So luckily, or we may have not heard it for years, you know? But, yeah.
So you guys go, you're going to be on Victory. You recorded that with Bill Kerecki?
Yeah, Kerecki, yep.
What was that like?
You know, I mean, I remember it, but I don't remember anything crazy,
yeah.
you know? It's like, I mainly remember... So Ian couldn't go. Ian was still in high school. Okay, so we were doing a U.S. tour. It was the All Out War U.S. tour, which was.
So you recorded it on tour.
Yeah, we stopped.
I always wondered. I was like, why did they end up there? Other yeah. than the Integrity connection.
That's why we wanted to go there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we wanted to go there because we were like, we want that. You know,
we want to sound like that.
Yes, we want to sound like that because at the time, you know, like nobody sounded as professional. You know, like it sounded like a real album, you know. And we could have gone to all the, you know, normal hardcore fucking places, but they always sounded bad. And everyone went there just because their favorite band went there, but they weren't thinking like, yeah, but the record actually sounds like shit.
Right.
Because, I mean, you can like, if the songs are great, you can get past a lot of audio and sonic sound, you know, the sound of it. And I think that's what a lot of people were doing in those days. But we were like, no. We want this to sound super professional. So, yeah, we went there on a U.S. tour. So Ian wasn't there. Ian was in high school. He was a senior in high school. We were playing weekends at the time, and we would literally, like, pull into high school on Monday morning and be like, get out. You got to go to school. And Ben and I quit. We were in the same grade as Ian, but we were like, fuck this. We're going to be rock stars. Get out. You know? And so Ian was like, I got to go to finish my degree. And we'd make fun of him and fucking, he, you know. We were putting all the stock was like, we're going to be rock and rollers. You know, this is what we're doing. You know, we're 15 years old and we're going, we got offered a show in Chicago. This is a big deal, right. You know? So, which is how we got signed to Victory. So we gave him the demo. He liked the demo. And then he was like, yeah, but I want to see him play. So we flew out. I mean, we even flew out. I wish. We drove out with this sketchy ass dude. He was like an older man. And he had a van in Syracuse, and he was like, "I'll drive y'all, you know, to Chicago."
John McCaig was around.
It wasn't McCaig. It was another sketchy dude, another sketchy skinhead. This guy Nuno, if he's listening, what's up, Nuno? He drove us to a lot of our shows, and this was part of the reason we got a reputation that we did too, because he brought all of his sketchball friends with us, who we were friends with, but they weren't necessarily our crew. You know what I mean? And so. But we knew them and they were friends. So these we would show up with this van full of dudes to these shows. And we went to Chicago and we played with like, I guess it was Detroit was the one we got signed to Victory. But anyway, these guys would roll out of the van and they were like adult men. And yeah. We were like 15 and they would like dance in the pit with like masks on and knives out and shit. And, you know, and so people are like, this band is fucking insane. Like, everyone just started associating the things that the people we did, that we brought did, and they would say it would change to they did.
Right.
So these guys did this, and these guys did that.
The beginning of Earth Crisis reputation.
But we didn't do shit. Yeah, right. It was just like these crazy fuckers. And they were like, I remember when we played Chicago, we played with that band Bloodline. And I think they were beefing with us. Sort of passive aggressively beefing with us over like Standby, you know, the abortion stuff. And they were saying, I don't remember what happened. But anyway, our friend, one of the sketchballs, ended up getting in a fight with another dude in the pit and like threw the guy over their merch table and like wrecked all their shit, kind of purposely because they were talking shit. So he trashed all their shit. All these things are like the base for these rumors and all this shit that right. started about us over the years, you know. But so Ian wasn't on the Firestorm EP. He didn't play bass on it. And we brought another guy who was filling in at the time who couldn't really play. At the time, you know, trying to find vegan straight edge musicians was impossible. There weren't any. There weren't any that were of any worth.
Right.
And so when we needed to fill in, somebody wrote us a letter or something stupid like that or called us or whatever and was like, yo, I'm good. I can do it. And we were like, all right, cool. And then he came and we practiced and we were like, this dude's not like good enough. But we'll get him good enough and so we can do the tour. But he was under the impression that when we got to the studio that he was going to like, oh, I'm going to play on your record. And we were like, you're not playing on the record. Right. And he was really bummed. So Ben and I did bass, like I did bass on two songs and he did bass on two songs. So I just remember like, that's what I remember most of the studio, like kind of like stressing out, you know, having to tell this dude that you're not playing on the record and getting there and the guitar sound that he wanted for us was bad. But hearing his stuff now in hindsight, knowing what I know, it's the guitar sound that every band had.
Right.
But for us, it wasn't what we were going for because it's pretty clean. Like if you listen to a lot of the Integrity stuff, it's a pretty clean, like, I mean, he showed us the amp. I know what it is. It's like a Marshall JCM-800 with maybe a boost to it. And it was very clean sounding. So when we played through it, I was like, no, man, I can't get with this, you know? And we had like crappy, like crate heads, you know, at the time, which are, you know, sort of sought after in a lot of worlds now too. A lot of death metal bands still use them and stuff. But I was like, this is more what we were used to. And he's like, why you're gonna turn your nose up at like a $1,200 Marshall JCM 800 and you want to use a $350 crate amp, you know? But he was cool. I mean, you know, I remember being professional. It went pretty smoothly. I don't remember any like hiccups or, I mean, Eden's demise. Carl blew his voice out a little bit. That's why we did that like kind of effect thing, you know, on there, the radio ish effect,
right?
Which is what set Carl down this path of trying to progress and get himself to a point where like that's never gonna happen again, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool. And I remember we stayed at this kid's house and his mom was really nice. Like we were staying at somebody's house for like 5 days and his mom just let us come and go as we please. We never met this kid before. We rolled into town and somebody was like, oh, this kid usually lets bands stay. And they lived in this beautiful house in the suburbs and he had like a nice sister and they just set us up in the basement and they were like, yeah, you guys can come and go as you please. And we're like, okay. And the mom and dad were like super friendly and cool with it. I'm like, what? And I think about that stuff because I'm like, would I do that? I'd like to think I was cool enough to do that.
And I will go so far as bands that I know that I actually love the members of as dear friends.
They can't stay.
No. If I love you that much, I go get you a hotel room.
Yeah, yeah,
I've done that on numerous occasions. Yeah. Where I'm like, hey, look, guys, I got you a hotel room.
I'd probably do that too. Yeah,
because I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, you've been on tour, and you know what people do, and you know the behavior, and you know the characters. Every band has characters. I mean, I remember us all being very polite and very. I mean, honestly, like we were actually very nice kids.
Right.
We really were. Like, I mean, we got rowdy from time to time, but we knew the place for that, and when we didn't, I think it was as the band progressed, we sort of
got
lost.
Rowdier,
Yeah, we sort of lost sight of where you can and can't.
I never
do
had
that.
To lose sight. I was a fucking disaster out the gate. Like I was always the instigator and the troublemaker so that's why I don't want anyone staying in my house because I know what you know. Like I was the first one to be like, and this is how we're gonna shit in this bag and hide it in their fucking vent, and they're not gonna know for weeks while the whole
house
smells like shit.
I'm with you. I think honestly the difference was you had like in Earth Crisis you had like Carl and Dennis who were very like responsible. People. I mean, Carl fucks around and Dennis certainly fucks around, but they came from worlds where they knew when to turn it on and turn it off. Whereas like Ian and myself, we were like juvenile delinquents.
Right.
Like straight up like burning houses down. I mean, we set houses on fire, you know, I mean, yeah, the same as most kids that grew up in our world, you know, but those guys kept us in check and we also had enough decency that we knew these people are opening their home to us. Like, we should be very respectful and nice, you know? And I think for the most part we were. You know, Dennis is klutzy, so I'm sure he broke 100 things in their house. But anyway, but yeah, there was... I remember that. I don't remember anything weird with Karecki. I mean, Jimmy's got stories because Undying recorded with Karecki. So he's got...
For the record, I wasn't trying to get weird Karecki stories.
No.
I just was asking him
Well, he's... I know things about him, but I didn't experience much of that. I remember the studio being much less professional looking than I expected.
Yeah.
It was in a messed up building and I think part of the building had actually burned down. And I remember having to walk through like tarps and shit and I was like, what is this? You know? And then we opened up this door and then all of a sudden you were like, oh, okay, it's a studio in here. But the rest of the building was shot. Like, I mean, almost condemned to the point where I think that when Jimmy recorded there, it was a totally different place. I don't think it was the same place that we recorded at, but he was cool. And I
definitely partied to some great recordings.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I'm glad we did that. You know, it was
between you guys and Catharsis and Integrity. He's locked in some of my favorite.
Yeah. Records. I mean, I think the Ringworm stuff too. Yep. I mean, I really loved, I hate to say this now cause I already bagged in the demo, but I think the Ringworm demo is maybe my favorite Ringworm. I do have to say that, but anyway.
So what's the course that gets you from Firestorm to Destroy the Machines? That's quite an evolutionary leap.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm trying, it's such a blur. And it, actually, it's a short, there's short time frames between the records because we were trying, our goal was churn out a record every year. Every year. The touring was like, we liked it, but it was like, for us, for Earth Crisis, it was more, we enjoyed writing and recording records. Like, that was our favorite thing. Like, we knew we had to tour. You had to. That was part of it. And I think we had fun doing it, but I don't know that any of us ever really loved it. Yeah. You know, I can say for myself, I absolutely didn't. It was a job for me, like the touring part. And I think we only did like maybe one U.S. tour off Firestorm. And then we were just like, okay, that's right. You know, and some of the songs that were on the 8-song demo went on to be on Destroy the Machines. But I remember Dennis went to Zimbabwe. He was finishing college through all of this. That's right. So we only did a summer tour for Firestorm. And Dennis went to Zimbabwe while we started writing Destroy the Machines. So we actually brought in another drummer, this kid, Corey, who, going back to my earlier story, he was in Ian's crew. When I talked about we had a crew of young musicians and Ian had a crew of young musicians, Corey was their guy, their drummer. And Corey went on to be in a band called Blood Runs Black from Syracuse. And
they were awesome.
Yeah, they were very good. Great fucking way band. Ahead of their time, too. Yeah. And so half of Blood Runs Black was half of my other band that I was doing with Mike Riccardi, too. So all these, we all lived in the same neighborhoods. It was North Syracuse. It was small. We all went to the same high school together, like Blood Runs Black guys, Earth Crisis guys, Framework guys. Like Ian was also in a just straight up death metal band at one point called Decadence. And they were pretty good but funny.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know, intentionally funny, but they were pretty funny. Anyway, so we started writing Destroy the Machines with Corey, who Corey was a more metal style drummer. He played a lot of double bass stuff, and Dennis was sort of against it. Dennis was like a hardcore kid. You know, he was like, I don't do fucking double bass. You know, so he comes back from Zimbabwe, and we're like, dude, we got these songs. Like, here's the thing. And, you know, the first song we wrote, I think, was The Discipline. And then it's got, like, a bunch of double bass stuff in it. And he was like, all right, I can get with that kind of double bass, you know. And then I remember the idea that the blueprint we had for writing the songs was just pounding. We were like, we want everything to sound like pounding all the time. Just pounding, pounding, pounding. Like, you have to picture somebody hitting things with a hammer.
Right.
Like, you know, that's the blueprint for the record. If you can't picture somebody hitting, you know, somebody to a hammer or hitting something with a hammer to the song, it's not going to make it, you know. And so we started messing around with what became Born from Pain. And Dennis did the double bass thing, like, kind of being funny. And we were like, no, dude, that's the beat. That's what you do. And he's like, I'm not doing that. I remember him getting up from behind the drum set pissed and being like, I'm not doing it. We're like, you're going to fucking do it. And we were like yelling at him. And he finally, like, it came to terms with it. We were like, that is the coolest beat that you've played over that part by far. That's what needs to happen. And yeah.
That is one of the hardest Earth Crisis songs.
I love it.
For sure.
I mean, it's messed up to say, but it's the truth. Anytime there was ever any sort of violence at an Earth Crisis show in those days, it was always during Born from Pain.
Makes sense.
There was a fight at a show we played in Florida. And Ian and I always, because we both saw it later, and we bring it up still to this day, a dude was getting stabbed in the pit. Not funny, but we're fucked up, so we think it's funny, okay? Right. And so it was at a skate park. And so the dude is stabbing the guy, like, in the head to the beat of the song. We're like, he's like, and we're like kind of laughing on stage as they push the two. They just opened up the bay door and pushed the two guys, one guy with a knife, one guy without, and closed it. And nobody, I don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened.
Holy shit.
Yeah. They just threw him. Just get out. Stab him outside, basically.
So, you know, we, going into Destroy the Machines now, how did you, again, coming from a metal background, I was already a Believer fan.
Yeah.
I mean, not a Christian, but like, I was a Christian death metal. If it ripped like Believer, I was in, and those guys were great. How in the fuck did you guys end up record? Cause you recorded that with Trauma Studios and that is,
yeah.
And you can literally hear the Believer sound. Hear the Believer sound in there, which it truly is what makes it incredible.
Yeah.
Because it's your music and their sound.
And that was the idea. That was absolutely the idea. Because, you know, like, we were very aware, like, we're metal dudes. You know, at heart, we're metal dudes. Like, most of us. Like, I don't... I guess Carl, I don't think Carl would have said that at the time. He was
He's definitely a metal dude too, though. Like when you talk to him now, that's his influence.
Yes, big time. But at the time, he came from a little bit of a different angle than us. But we all were on the same page. We all loved the same bands. Dennis was the odd one out. He never liked metal. Like Dennis still doesn't really like metal, I don't think. He appreciates it certainly more than he ever did. But we were like, okay, we don't want to sound like. Like, I remember Snapcase was about to record, and we were friends with those guys, and they were going to whatever that fucking studio in New York was that all the Revelation bands went to. Like, Byrne recorded there and everything. And then none of it sounds good.
Not Watchmen?
No, that was in Buffalo.
That was Buffalo.
Yeah. I just was talking about it the other day. But you'd know it if I said it. Fine studio, but everything sounded the same.
Yeah.
And so we were like, I don't know why they'd want to go there. Like, Snapcase had a pretty unique thing sound too. Why do you want to go there and just have that guy make you sound sort of like these other bands that are different, you know, that are kind of honestly beneath them as musicians and stuff, I thought anyway. Beneath them is not a nice word, but whatever, you get what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, Snapcase was,
why would you want to go somewhere where someone's going to try and like take your unique sound and make it sound like
something. And I think they only went there because it was the name, it was the studio, you know.
Right.
Where we were looking outside the box, like we were like, where could we record that's going to make us sound like a professional metal band? Like, because we were very critical. Like, we'd hear Firestorm and we'd be like, man, we sound like little kids. We don't want to sound like little kids. Like, we want to sound like adults. Even though we were little kids,
right,
we wanted to sound like an adult metal band, you know? We wanted to sound like we were 30, you know? Like, we really did. And so Jim Winters, who plays guitar in Conviction, who we had become friends with, because we found out Jim was on the team. Jim was vegan straight edge, you know?
Yeah.
Like, way before, again, people were calling themselves vegan straight edge. He was just vegan and straight edge, right, you know? So Conviction played Syracuse quite a bunch. We all loved him. We got to know Jim. And then Jim would stay at my house when he'd come through town. And I actually was going to fill in for Conviction on a weekend. I was trying to learn the songs. And we got pretty tight. We talk on the phone. And one time when he came through town, he was like, dude, you got to hear this record that I am. That like my buddies did, and I played some bass on, and we're like, oh, okay. And he played Believer Dimensions, the demo. I mean, not the demo. What would be the record? It was the final record, but it just hadn't been pressed yet. And so we were like, what the fuck? Like,
this when I realized he played on that, I was aware he was a vegan straight edge guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I saw, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, we were blown away. Right. Like, I remember listening to it that night and just being like, this is next level. Like, this is like, this record sounds incredible. Like, the musicianship is incredible. The songwriting is incredible. It's total another level. Like, with the whole thing with the opera thing, like, that was just like crazy, you know? Yeah. I mean, I was like, these guys are like the greatest musicians I've ever heard.
That record holds up. I've listened to it recently and I still love it.
Yeah, it's
still
great.
And the one before it, the Sanity Obscura, is another one. It's an awesome
record. Well, I went back. Yeah, because that was my first introduction. I knew the band.
See, I came in the other. I had actually already heard, because I was like, the minute I found out about death metal, I was like trying to get all of it. I was like, I want all of this shit.
Well, and they had toured with like, they toured, you know, it wasn't like they toured. It wasn't like it is today where they tour with Christian bands. Like,
right, right.
You know,
they were just touring with death metal.
Yeah, they toured with death metal bands. Yeah, absolutely. So like, you would have seen, you know, you'd see them if you went to see Bolt Thrower. Actually, Bolt Thrower was a tour they did. I remember them telling us about it. And they weren't, you know, it's very different. Like those guys, like Christian band, yes, in the sense that like they have a loose belief in God or whatever. Like they weren't like it evolved into what it evolved into, where it was like prayer circle on stage, you know, like,
right. It wasn't, yeah,
it wasn't that kind of stuff. And so anyway, we were like, dude, we want to record, we're working on a record and we want to record it with these dudes. Can you set this up? Like he went in to tell us the whole story. These guys recorded it themselves. Their grandma lives two doors down from me and they have a small studio in her basement, you know, that like, I can't remember what label they were on. Was it like Century Media?
They were on Roadrunner.
Was it? Oh, it was Roadrunner. Yeah. That record was Roadrunner. That's right. So Roadrunner gave them whatever it was, $25,000 or whatever to record a record. And they just bought all the stuff and recorded it themselves. And then the A&R guy, Monty Connor, came, and he's used to going to like Electric Lady and these places. So he came to their fucked up small town. I mean, they lived in the most fucked up town. There's nothing there. Like, nothing. And he, like, came there and, like, went into their grandma's basement and was like, you guys, this is what you bought? Like, you're recording this album? Like, he was super bummed and sketched out. But then they delivered this masterpiece of a record. So it all worked out. So, yeah, Jim's like, yeah, they got the studio. Turmoil, that band Turmoil was just coming up at the time.
Jim was in that too, right? At some point.
He was later on. Yeah. But he was just tight with them. They all lived sort of close in Pennsylvania. And they were recording demos with those guys too.
That's another phenomenal band.
Absolutely. Turmoil is fucking great. Yeah, totally. And so Jim was like, yeah, I think I can set it up. So we had a couple phone calls and they were like, yeah, I mean, if you guys want to record here. And we were like, we definitely want to record there. Like, yeah. And I was super nervous, like, to record with those guys because I knew, like, these guys are in a different fucking... I practiced so much. And we had lost a guitar player. So Ben had been removed from the band. He was having a hard time touring. He panic attacks and shit.
Yeah.
And so we were like... We finished up the writing without him. And then we were going into recording. And I was just like... we didn't have another guy yet. So I was like, I gotta play all the guitar. And, like... Like, fuck, you know, like, I don't know how I'm going to do this in front of these dudes who I just like, I was so nervous, but it was like maybe an hour until I realized like, oh, these guys are fucking awesome. And they were super complimentary. And looking back on it, you know, I did a couple solos on there that were bad. And, you know, and I remember Jim like shaking his head and being like super critical. And they were like, shut up, you know, let him do it the way he wants to do it. And they would afterwards offer, hey man, maybe you hit that note instead of that note. And I'd be like, okay, you know. And so they made them acceptable, but they let me pretty much do what I wanted to do. And all with everything, they were just like encouraging. They were like, man, you're super tight guitar player. No, like, and I'd be like, yeah, you know. And they were like, no, honestly, like, you doubled yourself, it sounds like perfect, you know, like, you did really good. So that was like a huge confidence boost for me, because I was like,
so you played all the guitars on that, right?
I played all the guitars.
That's another one I did not know.
I played all the guitars on every record up until Slither. So it was like, yeah, so Gamora's, I played all the guitars. Breathe the Killers, I played all the guitars. Huh. And then when we got Eric in the band, he started playing guitar on the records.
Gotcha.
When Chris got in the band, he never wanted to. The pressure was too much for him. And we were also kind of like, well, we like how Destroy the Machines came out, like the tightness of it.
Yeah.
And so we had worked with a couple professional producers at that point. Karecki tried to get us to do it. And, you know, you learn this as you're going on. These people will tell you, like, dude, this is going to go way faster, save you tons of money if the guy that writes the majority of the songs plays all the guitar. Because you're just trying to match each other.
Right.
Who's going to match each other better than me? Myself, you know? So we just sort of set that as that was how we did it from now on. Like, when Chris got in the band, we're like, we kind of do this when we record. And he was like, great, I don't want to record. And we were like, perfect. So for Gamora's and, you know, whatever stuff we did, like the Order and all those, the Misfits song and stuff like that, I played all the guitar on.
I had no idea. I always assumed it was both of you guys.
Yeah, no. Most bands are like that, though. Like, you don't hear Kirk Hammett's not playing on a Metallica album.
Right.
Like, he plays the leads and stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe as they got older and tried to be more diplomatic in the band.
Right.
But yeah, and Justice for All and Master of Puppets and Ride the Lightning, that's Hetfield. Like, it's 100%. Yeah.
That is crazy. Yeah. I feel like, I mean, I've asked all of you millions of questions. It's crazy that one never came up. I never realized that.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely badgered all of you at some point about this or that or whatever. Mostly I go to Ian for fight stories. Yeah. I pretty much don't ask him about the music. It's like, so.
Yeah, he wouldn't. Yeah, he'd probably be like, I don't know. Anyway, did you hear about the time?
Right.
Yeah.
That's, I don't really have to ask for the fight story. I could just go up to him and be like, you know where the chips are in this place? He's like, one time we were.
In a setting like this, yeah, it might not pop out. But yeah, if we're just like talking, you don't have to ask any of us for it. We'll be like, oh, dude, this one time.
right.
Yeah.
So you recorded with those dudes. And then pretty much from there, you guys were huge and everyone dumped money on you and you sold lots of merch and you became famous.
Yeah, we were
famous. So the story
it all worked out. Yeah,
it all worked out.
We were rich.
There was no more hardship. No more tough times.
No, there was no more problems.
That really was the perception, though. I mean, and you and I have talked about this, and it's kind of a lot of the point of me wanting to talk to you about this, was that there was the perception that you guys had made it and you were a big band and that you guys were selling all this merch, and then there's the reality.
You know, we were probably the worst merch selling band ever. I mean,